to solve this housing crisis, we are really going to have to put intense capital in for long periods of time. This is not going to be a short fix. And so we do need stability from both federal and state in terms of the way the legislation, the taxes and so on are working so people can understand them.
That's Carmel Hourigan, who joined me on CBRE's latest Talking Property podcast to discuss key outtakes from the Property Council of Australia's recent Property Leaders Summit. Carmel is the Property Council's Capital Markets President, alongside her role as the Office CEO of Charter Hall.
The US Inflation Reduction Act is also creating further competition for global private capital because of the generous incentives for renewable energy. And this is something Australia needs to be mindful of to attract that foreign capital that we so desperately need.
And that's Anthony Knepp, who led the summit as Executive Director of Capital Markets for the Property Council. The summit is the hottest property ticket in town. Staged each year at Canberra's Parliament House, it gives select senior leaders in the Australian property industry the opportunity to dissect the future of investment, capital markets, and the economy. And so that everyone can be very frank, all the discussions are governed by the Chatham House rule. Getting a read on those discussions, or under the Chatham House rule, of course, is what we'll be focusing on in this latest Talking Property episode. I'm Catherine House, your podcast host, and I'm delighted that Carmel and Anthony could join me to share some of their observations. Carmel, thanks so much for taking the time out today.
Thank you, Catherine. It's great to be here again and also with Anthony.
Anthony, great to have you on the podcast. You did a fabulous job of steering the summit, which featured a huge lineup of futurists, economists, researchers, politicians, and investors.
Thanks, Catherine and Carmel. Appreciate being here. Look, this 2024 Property Leaders Summit was the most successful by far in attendance, diversity, and the program. And we're really thankful to our sponsors, and particularly the principal sponsor, Commonwealth Bank of Australia.
So much of the discussion was about, surprise, surprise, housing, housing, housing. The challenges in that sector are clearly front of mind for everyone in the industry, given we need to deliver that targeted 1.2 million new homes nationally. And on the affordability front, I must admit to learning a new slang term from the summit, which was kippers, kids in parents' pockets eroding retirement savings, something that I can certainly relate to. So Carmel, did you leave the summit with any key takeaways on the housing front? I was interested to hear that the average age for people to be buying a first home in Sydney is now around 38.
Well, yeah, thanks, Catherine. I must say the kippers acronym was something that I found quite amusing as well, because I think I have two of those at home. But yeah, look, I think with the housing is obviously the biggest issue from, you know, a political viewpoint in Australia. And you don't need to go very far in terms of your friends and in terms of your family to understand this is hitting every single person in Australia. So my key takeout after leaving was, I think both sides of politics, both the government and the coalition, do recognise that supply is the answer. How we increase supply, I think everyone is in agreement there. And I think each party has got a plan. It's just very different to the way we get there. And I think part of this whole conversation at the conference was, let's understand each side of politics, let's understand how they're going to get this plan. And I think, you know, you saw, or you would have heard that through some of the conversations at the conference where we met with various politicians. We actually interviewed Peter Dutton on the day, we met with Anthony Albanese the day before, and it was really interesting to see such a concentration of politicians on both sides really wanting to talk about this issue, which they know that our group is actually so focused on. And for me, I would say, you know, if we just look at the two groups, I think the fundamental, with starting with the government issues or structure that we're seeing, is they have a more structured policy at the moment. They are the political power in government. So as a result, they do have those policies in place. And one of the few things that they talked about, of course, was the $32 billion, which they've actually put in place in terms of housing. And there's a whole structure and infrastructure around that, if you like. And that includes things like the HAF, the Housing Australia Future Fund, changes in terms of BTR, which they made over the last few years. And of course, they just recently announced the $1 billion in infrastructure. So all different components. So they will actually be able to increase supply. And the coalition very much focused on that, enabling people in Australia to buy their own home. And that is the fundamental basis where they sort of are setting their policy. So that, I think there were the differences there, and you know, a lot of conversation about the future of new housing opportunities, such as build to rent, the role of land leases, all these different affordable housing. It was certainly the topic of conversation at the conference.
I was really interested to hear that figure around that they're saying that the residential property sector is going to grow to $10.3 trillion and be the country's largest property asset class.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why there is so much focus there.
Yeah, and if we look around the world, institutional investors, global pension funds, sovereign wealth funds are big investors in the residential housing sector in many countries. And of course, the most notably being the US market, where I think it's something like 20% of allocations can go into that housing residential market. And they have very sophisticated residential housing stock, investment stock. And we've also seen that grow in Europe, and we saw that grow in the UK out of the global financial crisis as well, very successfully. So I think naturally we are turning our attention to things like build to rent in Australia, very much in its infancy, but we do think it's part of the solution. And that was one of the conversations that people were having, part of the solutions to the problem. It's not the only solution, it's part of the solution.
I think one thing that I took away from it is that there was a sense that we need to make this more of a level playing field. And maybe this is a good segue to you, Anthony, that there did seem to be a sense that some other countries are providing easier investor pathways. Do you think that we've got the right policies in place to facilitate this?
I guess my read of this is, yes, we definitely need to be more competitive globally in terms of attracting capital partners into Australia. We need this to help achieve our industry objectives and, I guess more importantly, to work with government in helping deliver the real estate that's required to achieve these housing goals. So I guess to that note, from a capital markets perspective, you know, for a level playing field, an example is the recent thin capitalisation rules, which make capital partnering more expensive from a tax deductibility perspective in Australia compared to other jurisdictions like the UK and the US, who have a carve out for real estate. And I guess from that perspective, it does make us a little bit more uncompetitive when we're competing for capital for build to rent projects, for example. There's other legislation such as Foreign Investment Review Board fees and regulation, timing delays, inefficiencies. These are all the things that make Australia more expensive to do deals. And I think a freer flowing, more transparent and better regulated environment would be advantageous for us.
Absolutely. And I guess feeding into that whole housing discussion, particularly when it comes to affordability, I was interested that there still doesn't seem to be a consensus on when we might need some rate cuts, which is one of the things that will start to stimulate more activity here. And one view was that we could still see a cut. Another was it won't be until 2025. One panelist was saying that Canada has had 100 basis points cut and could be a test case for Australia. Or is our labour market here proving to be too resilient? Any views from either of you on after that panel discussion?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, look, I think we all started the year thinking that we would see, consensus was, that would be a rate cut this year. I think none of us really are economists, and even economists can't get it right. We've seen that consensus forecast change quite a bit. And I think one of the things that we probably would say is that if we are going to get a rate cut, maybe that comes much later in the year, if not into 2025. It is going to be incredibly important to get a stabilisation of rates for the property market across all the sectors. So even not just housing, because housing affordability is critical, and there's obviously this correlation with, you know, the cost of actually building and interest rates and all that other stuff. But to get equity flow at the moment, we really do need to see rates stabilise, and as a result, we need to see valuations. And of course, this was a topic, stabilise across all of the sectors. And, you know, if we think about why would rates cut early, then you would need to see those changes coming through the economy. So we'd need to see unemployment increase. You'd need to see some real sort of negative data and a pullback in inflation as a result starting to come through earlier. And it just feels at the moment that inflation remains very sticky, that we basically continue to have quite a strong labour market. But I do think there is some thought processes out there, or people are starting to think that maybe that could actually get a bit softer earlier. But I think we just have to wait and see. But I would say from a capital perspective, a lot of the investors that we spoke to at the conference were saying, look, we're somewhere near that bottom, if you like, and it may be 6 to 9 months, but we're getting to that point where rates are going to stabilize, if not start to come back. And you're right, Canada and markets like New Zealand have had higher rates, maybe starting to see some rates come down. They have, in some ways, some similarities in their economies, which could be interesting. And there are a number of economists out there that are looking at those saying, you know, could we see a similar pattern? But I think rates have actually gotten higher in those markets than when we are.
Yeah. And if I could just add to that, you know, you're always going to get a conflicting view on timing and extent of monetary policy intervention. And yeah, obviously Canada has moved first with their stimulus. However, I feel post-budget, there's continued inflationary pressure across the board on materials, labour and construction, insurance, energy. So from discussions at the leaders' conference, I believe the expectations of a rate cut have been pushed out, and agree with Carmel on that. So from that perspective, we just need to see some of these inflationary pressures come off.
But I think the other point that was raised at the conference was there is an enormous amount of capital sitting on the sideline building up globally. So I think once we do see the benefit of Australia, when you look at Australia on the global platform, and maybe this comes to another point of the conversation, you know, we've got great population growth. We stand out. It's not a fund manager who doesn't talk about population growth as their opening line when they're going to look for capital. And it's true, we do stand out in that way. We've got, from a geopolitical risk point of view, lower in terms of the global scale, and we've got very low unemployment and so on. So the characteristics that potentially some of the driving inflation are actually a real benefit for us in terms of capital wanting to come to this market. So I think once we do see this stabilisation, we'll see that start to flow.
Yeah, and the transparency as well in this market.
Totally, yeah, exactly.
It's interesting because there was a lot of talk about Australia being still that attractive investment destination, but a sense that not all cities and states are equal. So Australia as a market, but that it does vary in terms of how people view the different cities and states. Any thoughts on that front? That's a tricky one.
I'm happy to go first, but Anthony, you go first, Anthony.
Look, I agree. You know, Australia is clearly very attractive for international investors. But to that extent, commentary has come through that Australia also represents a risk. And that's got to do with a lot of factors. And one of them, from capital markets perspective, is restrictive legislative introduction into this country. But yes, some states are faring better than others, and that's got to do with a lot of measures, but introduction of prescriptive tax regimes such as absentee surcharge, multiplication of stamp duty and property taxes such as increasing land tax rates. But additionally, planning delays, they're inflationary, and development projects are getting priced accordingly. So yes, the capital is lining up to enter into this market, but we've got to make it easier for it to enter Australia, but also then to be spread evenly across the states.
Yeah, and I would totally agree with that. I think the main issue here is the change, constant change in terms of what investors and owners, if you like, are expecting throughout the course of an investment cycle. And, you know, it's very difficult to outlay capital and have some of those things change every 2 years, 3 years. At the same time, trying to navigate an uncertain cycle, property cycle and economic cycle as well. So that potentially makes people sit on the sideline. And I think where it comes to one of the biggest issues, which is housing, to solve this housing crisis, we are really going to have to put intense capital in for long periods of time. This is not going to be a short fix. And so we do need stability from both federal and state in terms of the way the legislation, the taxes and so on are working, so people can understand them. And I think, you know, it was interesting, the $1 billion in infrastructure, I think it was, wasn't it, Anthony, that the Labor government announced in the last budget. And even committing that type of capital, you need to have just stability in terms of what the legislation is looking like. And unfortunately, in many situations, it has been changing. And, you know, maybe there's been good reason for some of that, particularly coming out of COVID, different states trying to obviously address issues in terms of debt and so on because of what we had to do during COVID, which was the right solution. But it needs to really solve this problem, we need people to work together. You know, private sector is part of the solution and the government needs to work really closely with them. And part of that is stability in legislation and taxes as well.
And the other thing, Carl, if I can just add to that, you know, clearly in one of the panel sessions with the investors and asset owners, your future, your super came up and RG97, and ultimately it is more restrictive for super funds to invest in housing and living communities. If it's not included in the index, it increases their risk and tracking error. So from that perspective, we need amendments to that legislation to encourage investment from the super funds more meaningfully into the sector.
Yeah, and I think that's been one of the hurdles for the PBSA sector as well, that they're not rated in the index. That makes it very difficult for your local superannuation funds to invest.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, just on that sector in particular, you know, coming out of the budget, just a lot of questions on how the policy that was introduced by the government and the coalition in terms of university funding and student accommodation and so on. There was a lot of just trying to understand what all that meant. So that was another part of this conversation, which is incredibly important. And then how that relates to overseas students and migration and so on, that was obviously on everyone's mind as well. It's a very important sector.
Absolutely. And I guess it's that broader discussion around alternatives. And it was interesting to hear one of the speakers at the summit talking about alternatives as being a very broad church. And if we cast our mind back a few decades, the core sectors in Australia were just office and retail, and industrial wasn't even on the radar, whereas now it makes up 30% of some fund managers' portfolios. What was your sense, both Carmel and Anthony, of how the summit attendees are viewing alternatives at the moment?
Generally, for investors at the moment, whether they be global or domestic investors, are very interested in alternates. And, you know, I suppose that started off in that sort of infrastructure space, that real asset space, but we are definitely seeing appetite, particularly in housing, I think, for different types of alternates. And, you know, you can see that in affordable housing, for example, student accommodation, you know, where they can get exposure to global thematics that we think there's going to be real growth. And I think we agree that housing, densification, some of those sort of thematics that we're seeing, population growth, energy transition, people are just generally very interested from a capital perspective. And we're seeing strong demand from everyone who comes into this Australian market looking at some of those opportunities. I think one of the points that that panel was also making was quite difficult to get scale in some of those sectors at the moment. And so there's some early movers coming into the market, I suppose, hoping that they will grow much larger, and that could be the case, versus what you see in markets like the US, where you're seeing significant scale and you've seen companies and REITs in the US just run some of these specific strategies. You know, we're obviously a much smaller population, but there is big opportunity in some of those.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Carmel. I think, you know, the key here is scalability. And it's one thing, you know, obviously we've seen a lot of interest in data centres. That requires significant energy transition. It's critical for the development of that sector. And I think from that perspective, real estate value add and repositioning is going to be critical. And that's where potentially data comes into the picture for higher and better use for your asset. There's also discussions around childcare, aged care, healthcare and life sciences. But as Carmel said, it's just not scalable at the moment and we need to find a way around that. So from that perspective, clearly there's a lot of demand. We've just got to position the capital and, you know, have the opportunities and the liquidity to make it work.
And I think what it's saying is, just back to your first point, Catherine, that we have these traditional, more traditional sectors, but in Australia, they are very large institutional sectors. And so to be, I suppose, fully invested in this market, you do need to have some exposure to some of these. So it will take some time, I think, to build up the alternate sectors within Australia, but is definitely on the mind. And what it will do is you'll end up seeing maybe potentially less in some of those traditional sectors, and maybe historically, the way we've seen those sectors where office has been the greatest component, maybe that comes down and you're seeing, you know, retail that was out of favour now sort of moving back in favour, and industrial is very, very popular. And there's a lot of, there was a discussion that people probably still, and maybe some of the domestics are still not set in logistics and industrial, and there will be still more money flowing into those sectors.
Yeah, and that came through really clearly. We just did our latest debt survey of lenders, and industrial is still almost double every other sector in terms of where the lenders want to put their money. But what was really interesting was to see student accommodation come in at number three. So there's obviously a lot of interest in those alternatives as well.
And I think with the student accommodation, I think the only thing I'll add there is it's obvious now as a market, we've got some really good operators in that space. And so there is good opportunity to invest with, you know, institutional quality operators who've got good pipeline as well. And yeah, so I think that's another growth sector.
Mm. So I guess we touched on it a little before, but energy transition, that was clearly top of mind at the conference, and the challenges that are there, because I guess time's clearly not on our side, unfortunately. The IMF has noted that the global step up in capital spend has to go from US $1.5 trillion annually to US $5 trillion by 2030. And for Australia, we need a $100 billion spend per annum in energy efficiency infrastructure to get to our net zero goals by 2050. Andy, what was your sense from the summit about whether we're on track as an industry?
Look, Catherine, I agree. A lot of money needs to be spent with regard to this. I don't think we're there. And clearly, you know, if we're going to have a meaningful transition into the growth of the data center real estate, there's a lot of work to be done. But, you know, from my perspective, the Australian property sector punches well above its weight in sustainability due to Neighbours and Greenstar. I mean, the sector bides by this, and as a result, it's an attractive investment opportunity internationally, and that's reflected in global ESG ratings such as GRESB, you know, which Australian companies have topped for the past 13 years. So, I mean, from our perspective, electrification, energy efficiency, I mean, this is a priority and there needs to be significant retrofitting. So energy efficiency, it delivers emissions and operational cost reductions. And, you know, we're behind the US. So really a lot more needs to be done with additional government funding and support, clearly. And I can point out that the US Inflation Reduction Act is also creating further competition for global private capital because of the generous incentives for renewable energy. And this is something Australia needs to be mindful of to attract that foreign capital that we so desperately need.
Mm. Any thoughts on that front, Carmel?
Yeah, look, I totally agree with Anthony saying we are, yeah, we're pretty good as an industry, right, in getting this in the environmental standards right across our assets. I would say my experience in office would be we're leaders, and the GRESB results across a lot of the core wholesale funds would definitely show that. I think what's interesting for me as a fund manager is the conversations we're having with capital and also with tenant customers, and that has fundamentally changed in the last 5 years. And maybe like if I look back a decade, it's just we're streets, miles and miles ahead of where we were. Because what was happening there is it would have been maybe number nine on the list when you had a conversation about come and invest with me.
Yes.
Now it's number one or number two. And in many instances with customers, tenant customers, it's number one. We've had some tenant customers, as an example, at Charter Hall who've chosen certain buildings because it has the highest rating in a market. And you're going to see more of that, particularly those corporates that may be global, that may be based in Europe, which feels like it's actually, from a legislative point of view, much further ahead, right, in terms of the way they're enforcing. But Australia is going to see more of that. And we've seen that in New York, in Manhattan, in terms of leasing and the type of standards assets need to have to actually be leasable. And also we're seeing some of that in London as well. So it's only going to get more and more critical to decisions. I totally agree with electrification, and, you know, it's very difficult to see, you know, a lot of brand new buildings being built now without that. But that does mean it feels like we're falling short in terms of the amount of energy that we need and our transition to renewables and so on. So still a lot of debate, I think, to come.
So one other thing that did pique my interest at the conference was in relation to AI. And I guess we read about that every day as well. And one of the speakers was commenting that early adopters of AI will find that to be a differentiator. And indeed that this AI boom is, you know, represents the beginning of the fourth industrial revolution. How do you both see that playing out in Australia for the property industry?
Well, I can say, Catherine, this was clearly a very interesting session, and I think there'll be a lot more of this going forward. But AI will reshape the way that humans work, live, where we work, and what roles will be in demand in the future. So, I mean, effectively, yes, this is a disruptor or revolution, if that's the way you want to describe it. So that speaks to investing into alternatives, or, you know, what provides the best risk-adjusted return given the environment that AI presents. So, for example, a huge shift in data requirements, and we're seeing that. So from that perspective, I think that this will also depend, as we said before, on the level of energy transition and the availability of the critical infrastructure that's going to support wherever the industry goes, as driven potentially by shifting AI.
Yeah, look, I love that session. We had three great speakers talk about different topics, but they were related, one on cyber and data, one on AI, which scared me, and one on data centers. And they are all related, as Anthony just said, but, you know, it just blows my mind when I see people talk about AI, and we had a great speaker who spoke for, I think it was 7 minutes on AI, and showed us effectively what AI could do in deep fakes and some of these things, right? So I think it will, and I think one of the things he did say in that speech was, yes, it will transform things, but Australia is not an early adopter by any stretch of the imagination. So the, I suppose, infiltration into corporate Australia is very low at the moment, was what I took from that 7 minutes of fame. But it did scare me. It does, you know, make you really think about what is the future of space usage? How could this affect space usage? You know, as Auntie just said, how much data requirement do we need? What is that critical infrastructure? And then, of course, following up, one of the other 7 minutes we had after that was on cyber risk and what are the implications for cyber risk and AI and all of that together for Australian corporates and for real estate. But look, I think the future's, my take on it generally is the future's bright with AI. There's a lot we could be doing. I think we just need to spend some time testing on AI, and I don't think a lot of us haven't done enough of that yet. But maybe the next generation will, Catherine. Maybe we're all getting a bit too old.
Yeah, I think, and also if I could just say, you know, this is going to be critical real estate infrastructure that needs to be secure and supported by government as well. So very interesting asset class that's going to, as the speaker mentioned, grow in dimensions.
Yes, I think it's going to be a brave new world in the next few years.
It certainly will.
I really enjoyed listening to all the summit conversations. I think great to see that there is that bipartisan support for what needs to happen in the housing sector. I think, you know, good to see that there is that focus around the energy transition, a lot of great things that, you know, people are focusing on in that alternative sector. So it's going to set the stage very well, I think, for the upcoming Capital Markets Forum in October. So thanks for joining to chat through it all, Carmel. I really appreciate you taking the time out today.
Thank you, Catherine. No, it's been great. And look, I really enjoyed it, particularly really having an opportunity to have, you know, Anthony, how many people were there? 200 and something?
220, a significant growth on last year. So happy to say that.
Yeah, I think having that mix of global investors, domestic investors and managers in Australia, and very senior managers and the heads of agency was, it's a good mix and it's worked well. And I think this is, gosh, is our 22nd time or something?
I think that was our 21st birthday.
So, there you go, Catherine.
Did you have a cake?
No, we didn't have a cake, but we are looking forward to next year. We've got to make it bigger than Ben-Hur, so we just got to work it out.
Well, I think you did a fabulous job, Anthony, of steering the ship, and look forward to seeing what comes out of the Capital Markets Forum.
No, absolutely. Thank you, Catherine. Appreciate that. And the data and energy transition will be a big topic at the Capital Markets Forum 1st of October. So thanks so much, Carmel and Catherine. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks also to all of our listeners for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed the episode. And if you like the show, you can subscribe through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast hosting platform. We'd also love it if you could rate or review Talking Property to help spread the word. And if you have any questions or feedback, you can drop me a note at any time via talkingproperty@cbre.com. Until next time.